This is the One Thing Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Adam Rindy. The One Thing Podcast brings together leaders in functional and naturopathic medicine to discuss actionable information that may unlock puzzles in the areas of gut health, brain health, metabolism, and longevity. Please note, these episodes do not replace the opinion of your doctor. They are not intended to diagnose or treat any condition. Please discuss this information with your provider and discuss your own unique personal health history before adapting this information. Please subscribe to our episodes so that you can stay on top of the most current information in these areas of medicine. Hey everybody, this is Dr. Adam Rindy. Welcome to episode 96 of the One Thing Podcast. In this episode, I welcome on Claire Hall, who is the research lead at Mindset Health. Claire will be speaking with us about hot flashes and managing hot flashes with the use of self-directed hypnotherapy through their app called Evia. Before I speak more about Claire, I want to mention the episode is devoted to the Child Rescue Coalition. You can find their work at childrescuecoalition.org. Child Rescue Coalition is devoted to protecting children from sexual abuse and also sexual predators. Claire has decided to dedicate this episode to their work. If we are able to achieve a play count of 500 plays within the first 30 days, the One Thing Podcast will be making a donation to the Child Rescue Coalition on behalf of Claire. So please help us make this goal by sharing this episode with your loved ones and social networks so we can achieve the 500 plays within the first 30 days. Now about Claire. As I mentioned, Claire is a research lead at Mindset Health. She was actually one of the original founding members of the team who helped launch Mindset Health into what it's become today, which is a leading digital therapeutic company in the health tech space. Mindset Health uses hypnotherapy-based protocols to help manage various health issues such as IBS and hot flashes. Their app, Evia, is dedicated towards hot flash management. So in this episode, we will discuss the various aspects of hot flashes, what they are, how they present, the degree of debilitation they might cause in someone who's going through menopause. We'll learn about the mechanisms of hypnotherapy and hypnotherapy protocols and how they might help regulate hot flashes. And we'll discuss the clinical research that they're doing on hot flashes and some of the outcomes that they're achieving. I know you'll enjoy this episode, learning about safe and effective therapies to help manage menopause with limited side effects and limited risks. So without further ado, welcome to the next episode of the One Thing Podcast. Claire, welcome to the One Thing Podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy that we made this happen. I know we met earlier this year when I did a webinar for Mindset Health, and it's great to connect with you and learn more about your work. So thanks for being here. I thought we get started just hearing how you got involved with Mindset Health, how you became one of the early contributors to the work you guys do there, and how did that all manifest?
Yeah, definitely. I get this question a lot because, you know, Mindset Health is based in Melbourne, Australia. And as you can tell, I am based in the US. And I am still the only US employee that Mindset Health has. So it's definitely a question that comes up a lot. I, prior to working at Mindset Health, was working in a neuroscience research lab where I was studying the effects of opioid use disorder, and obviously working sort of adjacently in the chronic pain and pain world was very interesting, but also a little depressing, if I'm being honest. And it sort of put me on this journey of researching alternatives to pain management. And that's when I sort of came across hypnotherapy and thought to myself, there is wonderful research in hypnotherapy, and I knew nothing about it. I didn't know anyone who was providing it. I knew basically the stage hypnosis stigmas that we all know, and really saw this gap in what was being done in the research world, but what is actually understood from a broader public perspective. And that's sort of how I found Mindset Health. And at that stage, it was just Chris and Alex, the co-founders, and a couple others who were working on, at that time, it was just the Nerva app, which was for a hypnotherapy-based app for irritable bowel syndrome. And I linked up with them and sort of saw the vision of where this could go and the vision of how we could deliver hypnotherapy in this way pretty broadly. And they asked me if I would jump on board with them, and the rest is history from there.
That's really interesting. So you were in the first 10 people being in within the company?
I think I was number 4 or 5, so pretty early.
Wow, amazing. That must be rewarding for you and to kind of grow and see what you guys have become.
Yeah, it's rewarding, definitely. It's a challenge, and I like that. And trying to change the world's perspective on hypnotherapy is definitely a big undertaking, but it's been really very rewarding as well.
Yeah. So before we dive into what we're talking about today as far as the main topic of menopause and hypnotherapy applications, can you just give us the rundown of all the different areas you guys are you're supporting people with now?
Yeah, definitely. So I mentioned Nerva, which was our first product, which is a irritable bowel syndrome app. And with that, we partnered with Dr. Simone Peters out of Monash University. And really the model of Mindset Health and what we're doing is partnering with academic researchers who have a protocol that has been studied, and taking that protocol and helping them deliver it to a mobile app format so that it can be offered to patients and in a really scalable way. So the Nerva app was our first app. We then partnered with Dr. Gary Elkins, who's the head of the Mind-Body Medicine Research Lab at Baylor University, to create the Evia app, which is more the topic we'll be chatting about more today. But the Evia app is for menopausal hot flashes. And we also worked with Dr. Elkins to develop the Finito app, which is an app for smoking cessation. So all hypnotherapy-based protocols. And we've recently released an app working with Dr. Michael Yapko called Clario, which is general mental health. And we are in the works working with the Neura Institute in Sydney and developing a chronic pain app as well. So we've got a lot going on, certainly no shortage of challenges across all those different areas. But the idea is taking the areas where there has been substantial research into hypnotherapy as an effective tool, and taking those protocols that, like I said, are very effective and have been used in clinical trial on a really small scale generally, just because limit of access, and being able to take those protocols and put them in the hands of patients all over the world.
Wonderful. Yeah, so I think a good next place to go is to hear your concept or your kind of personal view of menopause or perimenopausal transition. I know this phase of life is viewed differently throughout the world, and different cultures experience it differently. So it's hard to define, I guess, for everybody, but I'm just really curious how your view of it is, and just kind of what you feel women are experiencing during that stage change.
Yeah, I think menopause is misunderstood, misrepresented, and viewed very negatively in our culture and our society, which I feel very sad about, because it's this period of change and drop in estrogen, drop in progesterone that brings about changes that are viewed so negatively. And I think it's doing a disservice to the human body and the human brain by viewing it in such a negative light. You know, culturally, we look at cultures where you have a quinceañera in puberty, or you have bat mitzvah during puberty to celebrate these changes and these phases of life that are quite similar to menopause. You know, going through puberty, you have this increase in hormone levels that leads to a whole cascade of changes. And it's not dissimilar to what's happening in menopause. So just sort of on a basic principle level, I think is setting the stage that it's menopause is not a health condition. It's not something that needs to be treated or that people need to be saved from in any stretch of the imagination. It really is a natural life change that women go through. And I think we can talk about ways to manage the symptoms that go along with that, but just setting the stage that it's certainly not something that should be viewed negatively.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. There's a lot of good resources that I can put in the show notes about empowerment through menopause and some different views that are being embraced about what this change of life stage means and what it can mean to the individual.
Yeah. One thing that's interesting, there was a survey study that was published. We often associate mood changes, anxiety, depression during menopause. Certainly there's symptoms that happen to coincide very often. But there was a great study that was published surveying postmenopausal women and looking at satisfaction with life in general and mm-hmm. quality of life. And during the perimenopausal, early postmenopausal phase, there was a small decline, but actually in that late postmenopausal period and beyond, women, that's the time where women tend to say that the overall quality of their lifetime has been the highest. And so I think, we have these transient periods that we do see changes, like I said, similar to puberty. There's certainly mood changes that go along with puberty, go along with menopause, but late postmenopausal, you actually see satisfaction with life be some of the highest that it's been.
That's great. Yeah. So I'm curious, when you set out to develop Evia, like what were the why questions behind, the development? Like what was the problem it was trying to solve?
Yeah. So the problem really, we know that there is good options for managing vasomotor symptoms specifically, and that hormone replacement therapy is a great option for a lot of women. Not for all women, but for a lot of women, it's a great option. And there's certainly quite a few women that it's either not a good option for, they don't want to try hormone replacement therapy, or, there's the edge cases where it's actually weaning off hormone replacement therapy or alongside. And so there's a lot of women who are sort of left out from hormone replacement therapy or other options. And the initial study that was done with the Evia app protocol was actually in women who were breast cancer survivors. So women who were on tamoxifen and obviously couldn't go on any sort of hormone replacement therapy, but had quite severe hot flashes. And so the original protocol was actually studied in that group of women. And the hypnotherapy group saw a significant reduction in hot flashes compared to the control group. So then the protocol actually went on to be brought into being studied in postmenopausal women. 187 postmenopausal women was the second study that was done. I'm sort of beating around the bush for the why, but I think really it's just that we know hypnotherapy is very effective. And it's another option for women. And I think the great thing we can do is to develop options. The one thing that makes menopause feel very difficult, or makes any life transition feel very difficult, is when you don't have options in front of you. And so when we have something that has been shown in the research to be really effective, really safe, but really inaccessible, I think it was sort of a no-brainer in bringing this and bringing this out and giving it as an option to many more women.
That's great. Yeah. When you were describing the why, I was thinking of how many patients I've encountered over the last 10 to 15 years who fit this situation where either they have a strong family history of breast cancer and they're really hesitant to do any type of intervention with estrogen-based products, or they've had a personal history of breast cancer and diagnosis is happening earlier and earlier. So some people are getting diagnosed well before they even get into menopause.
Yeah.
And so it's often a situation where, you know, there are other medication options, but they're also not appealing to people. And it's really nice that there is a non-drug alternative like Evia. And so I was just thinking of one, you know, couple of patients that came to mind as you were describing that. So that's really great. So when you were developing this, like how did, I know that researchers always like to think about mechanisms and, you know, and have these discussions, especially if you're being challenged with like, how's this work? As far as like putting the pieces together, like what is a hot flash and how does hypnotherapy modulate hot flash? Like, have you gotten that deep into to understanding, or is it sort of that stored in development?
So it's definitely the exact mechanism of how hypnotherapy affects the thermoregulatory system is not known. And I, you know, hopefully we'll talk in a few years and it will be known. But at this point, it really is not well understood. In terms of the actual mechanism of how hot flashes and why hot flashes occur, the hypothalamus is responsible for thermoregulation. So taking all of the information from all parts of our body. So our internal temperature, our skin receptors send temperature information to the hypothalamus. And then the hypothalamus takes that information and reacts and elicits a response if necessary. So if the information that's being sent says that we're hot, then the hypothalamus stimulates a cascade of events that are intended to cool us down. And so we have what's called our thermoneutral zone. And within our thermoneutral zone, we're able to, manage these small adjustments to temperature that we experience day to day. In the top of our thermoneutral zone is that threshold that would send us into a more dramatic response, like a sweating response. And then the bottom of our thermoneutral zone is, again, that floor where we would be sent into a more dramatic response, like shivering. And what we do know is that during menopause, when we do see that reduction in estrogen, progesterone, that the thermoneutral zone is narrowed. So what used to be sort of a zone where we could manage these day-to-day fluctuations in temperature, for some reason is setting us outside of that thermoneutral zone. And that's what's triggering the hot flash. So we're just unable to respond to these fluctuations in temperature like we used to. And it's triggering a sweating response or an overreactive response to what used to be within our thermoneutral zone.
Mm-hmm. And so estrogen is one of the main hormones involved with that, but are there other hormones like progesterone that could influence it?
So we don't really know, to be honest. Estrogen certainly is the main culprit that we believe to be influencing it. And again, it's not really understood why estrogen is influencing the thermoneutral zone. We know that there is estrogen receptors in the hypothalamus, and certainly that a reduction in estrogen would certainly cause some change in the hypothalamus. We know that's where the thermoregulatory system is. But again, we don't understand what the actual mechanism is there. So, you know, it's step one with my research hat on, is that there's just so much we don't understand about vasomotor symptoms, so much we don't understand about the effects of estrogen, not just in the hypothalamus, but globally. And it's certainly an area where there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. I think what's troubling or difficult about hot flashes is how they just kind of arrive unannounced at any moment during the day, you know, and it's kind of like no warning. And so that's just a very uncomfortable feeling. And then for some people, they seem to get them, you know, later in the day or in bed or what have you.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems with hot flashes and one of the biggest complaints is night sweats. So hot flashes that are happening at night, and night sweats and hot flashes, but night sweats specifically obviously interfere with sleep quality. And we know that sleep quality has a massive cascading effect on many other things. So they interfere with sleep quality, but also we look at hot flash on the hot flash daily interference scale. So not just the frequency and severity of hot flashes, but we also look at the daily interference because, like you're saying, you know, quality of life is significantly impacted with hot flashes, that they're unpredictable and they can be embarrassing. You know, if it's happening in the middle of a meeting, if it's going to happen to me on the podcast, I'd turn all red. It'd be very embarrassing. And I think it's just something that is underplayed in terms of a quality of life impact for women.
Yeah. And, you know, especially I think, you know, if say a man has never experienced one, is they're not going to offer much compassion or empathy, you know, to their partner or spouse. You know, it's just kind of like, it's not a lived experience. So, you know, luckily there's a lot of support for people who are struggling with menopausal symptoms. But I think that's one thing that's, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, help lots of women in this phase of life. And I see what it does to their mental health and how troubling it is. And I think it's really important for people to loved ones and people to know that it's just such an uncomfortable feeling and to deal with. And it really throws off your sense of equilibrium and balance. And so I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why it's so challenging to study and to research menopause more generally is that, you know, it's so hard to tease out symptoms and tease out these responses, because you look at an increase in anxiety and depression during menopause, and, you know, that's pretty well understood in a lot of women. But there's also oftentimes a decrease in sleep quality and an increase in these quality of in hot flashes causing a massive impact on quality of life. So it's oftentimes so hard to tease out what's causing what, and just makes it a challenging thing from a research perspective to study, but certainly doesn't downplay the effect of the implications of it, because certainly is a quality of life impact for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of research going into estrogen's effect on the brain. And, you know, so we know it's that information's on its way. So I think we're learning more and more about dopamine, serotonin, all its relationships with estrogen.
Yeah. One thing that isn't talked about often, but I find it quite interesting, is that I believe the figure, I think it's 25% of women experience hot flashes during pregnancy as well. And, you know, it's one of those things that, again, talking about the relationship with menopause to puberty, there's also a relationship to pregnancy. And there is obviously, you know, seeing that that hormonal change does interfere with thermoregulation. And we see that with a small proportion of women during pregnancy as well.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So when you're looking at hypnotherapy, I think for the different types of researchers I've heard, and I'm most familiar with your work with NERVA and the way that you describe how hypnotherapy works with the mind-gut axis. How do you think hypnotherapy is helping? Is it more from a standpoint of prevention, or is it more from the standpoint of management of hot flashes, or is it both?
So the interesting thing about hypnotherapy, I'll back up, I'll talk about hypnotherapy more generally, and then I'll answer your question. So The interesting with hypnotherapy that is different compared to other psychological therapies is that, you know, if we look at it compared to something like CBT, CBT is highly effective for a lot of different conditions, including vasomotor symptoms. It is shown to have some effect on vasomotor symptoms. And the main difference is that with CBT really is focused on improving the perception and response to the stimulus. So if we're talking about it from the perspective, we'll just say pain generally. So pain generally, it's helping you manage or cope with pain and reframing that using cognitive reframing to increase your ability to manage and deal with any amount of pain. With hypnotherapy, the difference that we see is quite interesting, that it's not just helping manage or cope with pain. It's actually changing our perception of pain. And so we see with hypnotherapy that when you actually reflect back on the stimulus, it patients who have done hypnotherapy versus CBT tend to say that the actual stimulus itself was less, not just that they were able to manage it better. And so that was very abstract, but I'll talk specifically about hypnotherapy for vasomotor symptoms, is that we don't believe that it's just helping women manage the symptoms better. We really do believe that, and it's supported from the research that we see, is that it really is turning down the frequency and severity of hot flashes for women. And so, you know, in the studies that we've done, we look at not only the self-reflected frequency and severity, but in Dr. Elkin's in-person trial he did with postmenopausal women, he actually put temperature sensors on the skin of women. And it was shown that not only, like I said, the self-reflected self-diary of frequency and severity was improved, but actually the temperature sensing on the skin showed fewer hot flashes during the day.
Wow.
And so there is an effect with hypnotherapy that we see. It's actually an effect on reducing the instance of hot flashes. And you know, we think it has to do with some sort of neuroplasticity of being able to helping the brain adapt to this new lower level of estrogen. Again, we don't understand that mechanism. I wish we did. But it has some sort of neuroplastic effect of helping the body really manage this new lower level of estrogen.
Very interesting. So for people who are new to hypnotherapy or the type of hypnotherapy that's used in Evia, what are they doing and what are they experiencing during the sessions?
Yeah. So a clinical hypnotherapy session is not the stage hypnosis we all think of, certainly not the swinging stopwatch. Clinical hypnotherapy is a therapy that's used that sounds a lot like a guided meditation for the actual experience of it. And the theory behind it is that at the beginning, there's a progressive relaxation tool. An example of one that we use is progressive body scans. So starting at the top of the head, going to the tips of the toes. And that's really getting the patient or the user into a deeply relaxed state. So with hypnotherapy, you're never asleep or out of control or unaware of your faculties. You are just sort of in a deeply relaxed state. And then within that deeply relaxed state, the next part is a guided meditation like portion. So within the Evia app, that middle portion is guided meditation really focused on coolness. So one of the sessions is called the Snowy Mountain Path. So guided imagery of walking on a snowy mountain path. And then the suggestions really are around, which is that therapeutic component, giving suggestions around coolness and being able to feel that coolness in the breeze on your skin and really giving suggestions that women are in control of their temperature, that there will be no more hot flashes. You'll be in control of your temperature and be able to manage these symptoms. So the way that hypnotherapy, the main therapeutic components are, you know, that progressive relaxation technique, getting women into a deeply relaxed state, and then the guided imagery with the therapeutic suggestions. So, and having the ability to give suggestions while patients are in a deeply relaxed state where they're more open to feeling those suggestions in their bodies, feeling what that feels like without the initial like no response that, you know, if I say to someone who's having 7 hot flashes a day, that they're going to feel cool, they're going to be in control of their symptoms, they're going to say, no, I have 7 hot flashes a day. And yeah, that's not the case for me. But within a session where they're deeply relaxed, they're imagining using that imagery of being on a snowy mountain path, feeling that cold breeze on their face, you're more open to suggestions that you're able to be in control and able to go back to that normal, that thermoneutral zone that you're used to.
Yeah, I really like how Mindset Health understands that first layer of resistance is there, and that there's a process of kind of letting in this messaging.
And that first layer is there for a reason, right? You know, that's not wrong. That's there for a reason, because if we accepted everything we heard, then, you know, we wouldn't be good functioning human beings.
Yeah.
So it's there, it's protective for us. It's there for a reason. And, you know, using hypnotherapy in a clinical setting, we get people into a relaxed state in a really safe setting and, offer suggestions for therapeutic improvement only.
Yeah. Reminds me of, in my 20s, I was living in San Francisco and I went to this breathing class. It's like supposed to be for healing and health. And they had us lie down and the instructor was walking around whispering in our ears. And I was not receptive. So that was not therapeutic for me. So I quickly got up and left.
Well, it's funny. I'll tell you a funny story of when we started out with the Nerva app is that, you know, what you're describing is that I think whispering in the ear might be an extreme example, but the voice actually really matters for people to feel connected to what they're listening to. And when we first released the Nerva app, we had Dr. Simone Peter's voice as the recordings, and we got all this feedback that patients didn't like the voice. And so we had a really hard conversation with her that we were going to have to replace her voice in the app because people weren't responding to it and weren't connecting to it. And so we now have a wonderful voice actor who is coached by Dr. Peter's but it's, you know, the voice does matter for you to feel deeply relaxed and engaged with the sessions. Mm-hmm. But it was funny. Yeah, that was a tough conversation to have early on.
I bet. Yeah. It's difficult to hear that. But I think, you know, we have these connections to sounds and just feelings of safety that need to be there. And I'm really glad you guys understand that, because I could see people would just walk away if that wasn't part of the process.
if we were whispering in people's ears, I don't think
that that definitely would be. I can tell you from firsthand experience, that is not good.
All right, we'll make note of it. We won't do it.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of hard to do through an app, but I'm sure someone could do it. So what kinds of results are you seeing in your work? Like, are you at a point where you've gathered lots of user experiences?
Yeah. So, you know, we're doing a lot of work across all the apps. With the EV app, we actually just published a paper that was looking at 10,000 of the EVA users and describing characteristics of the users. So, the median age and a lot of different characteristics around symptomology and quality of life, sleep impairment. And we're about to submit for publication another study looking at actual results in EVA. And we see about 70% of EVA users have a clinically significant improvement in vasomotor symptoms. And so we see a pretty significant response through the program itself. It's 5 weeks long. So it's not a program that is long or intensive really in any way. Of course, 15 minutes a day always feels intensive, but 70% achieving clinically significant reductions in vasomotor symptoms is, on par with and certainly in the conversation with any other any other treatment for vasomotor symptoms that exists.
Definitely. Yeah, this is a little off topic of that question, but maybe helpful to know is, and it might not be available, is there a particular phenotype of person that's going through menopause that is more likely to have hot flashes or more likely to respond to hypnotherapy?
So from the predictors of response that we've done, we haven't been able to identify that. I will tell you that previous to the EV app, it primarily had been studied in postmenopausal women. And from a research perspective, that makes sense because you at that point, there is no more variability in estrogen. So the results really do are correlated with the intervention, not any fluctuations in estrogen in the study participants. So there was some question of whether or not in perimenopausal women that it would be as effective. And what we've seen from the EVA user app data is that there's no difference if it's perimenopausal versus postmenopausal, which is great news. You know, I think from the perspective of when is best to start hypnotherapy, it can be started. We know it's an effective tool even before hot flashes begin. So you can actually start it as a preventative measure. And it doesn't seem to matter when it started, whether it has an effect. So, not great predictors of response, but it hasn't seemed to make a difference from the research that was done in a clinical setting versus research that we've published with the app.
Yeah. And the great thing is, you know, there's not this long list of potential harms or complications or risks. You know, it's just, if it helps, it helps. If, you know, it's not going to cause more harm for trying, you know, versus with hormone replacement therapy or other interventions, you know, we're always going through lots of pros and cons and weighing those types of risks before starting.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We don't see the same response really with EVA. With EVA, most of the users, you know, I hesitate to say all because I'm sure there's an exception here or there, but there's the vast majority of users see some reduction in hot flashes. And with with NERVA and the IBS program, there is a percentage of non-responders that we don't see that carries over to hypnotherapy for vasomotor symptoms. And with the non-responder percentage in the NERVA app, it's about 15% are don't see any improvement in their symptoms. And within that 15% that don't see any symptom improvement, we still see peripheral benefits and reduction in anxiety, reduction in depression, reduction in stress. And so on the contrary to having those discussions around, you know, the pros and cons of starting a different pharmaceutical intervention, you know, even with patients that don't see symptom improvement, we still see improvements in anxiety and depression. And so that's really a win-win to me. Of course, we would like everyone to improve, but, you know, you're not dealing with these adverse side effects. You're actually seeing peripheral benefits, even if it's not working.
Mm-hmm. And with your research, do you subset out people who are doing other therapies and this is layered on top and people who are doing this as a monotherapy? Is that something you know?
Yeah, so we ask that. And in the manuscript that we're submitting for publication soon, we'll tease it out so that we'll be able to look at what, you know, if it's a standalone or combined with other therapies. And I think what I can tell you is it doesn't really matter if it's a standalone or combined. There's sure improvements across the board. The interesting thing, we'll just be looking at the degree of improvement. And I think that's something that everyone will be interested in.
Okay, great. So you and I were sort of joking offline before we talked about some myths. And one of them was like, is layering really something that is a good thing to do when you're going through menopause? So layer, like wearing, you know, a vest over a blouse and then kind of slowly kind of taking, disrobing different layers as you experience hot flashes. So you were saying that that might be a little bit of a myth.
Well, so the myth is, you know, the myth really is that, that controlling your room temperature is, you know, the want and the need is that a lot of women will turn the air conditioning up, make it really cold, and feel that that is going to prevent hot flashes. And it's actually quite the contrary. And this is one of the first pieces of education we give in the app, just around a lifestyle modification. That, you know, if we go back to talking about that thermoneutral zone, any spike out of that is actually, you know, affecting, you know, if you spike down too far, then you're actually going to come right back up the other side. And so the best thing you can do from a room temperature perspective is try to keep your temperature as ambient as possible. So if you're bundled all up and then shedding layers and then putting them back on, that's actually really not helpful. And the best thing you can do is, you know, as best as you possibly can, try to keep the temperature of your surroundings really as ambient as possible. So I'm, you know, if you're going inside and outside, layers might be the option to keep an ambient temperature, but really trying to sort of artificially lower the temperature of your surroundings and to stave off hot flashes is it's a myth, and trying to keep as ambient of a temperature is actually far better.
Very nice. It's good to know. So that'll be deleted from my handout for all my patients as of today.
Yeah. It actually happens most often at night. And we see, you know, you see a lot of women who will put a big fan right next to their bed. And what that does is, you know, you'll fall asleep and you'll pull the covers on top of yourself and cocoon in because you've got this massive fan making you cold. And then being covered in your blanket so tightly will trigger a hot flash. And so really the best.
Nice. Okay. Well, this has been really informative. Thank you. I'd love just to hear some just take home messages and just anything you'd like to share about where you're headed with things and anything else that you'd like to kind of impart us with.
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit, you know, one thing I love to talk about with our, what we're doing at Mindset Health is sort of our vision for how research should be conducted in a digital therapeutic landscape. You know, digital therapeutics and app-based programs are pretty new, and it's something that, because it's so new, I think the whole research world is scratching its head a little bit on how to proceed and what, how we should go forward with publishing research. And the decision we've made at Mindset Health is that we are not only going to publish randomized clinical trials, which is obviously the gold standard, but we also really want to publish real world user data. So what we've done is not only just done clinical trials, but also retrospectives that that show patients and show users in an actual real world app using setting. And so why this is important is that in a clinical trial setting, everything is controlled. So as we talked about just a minute ago, you know, in a clinical trial setting, you wouldn't have patients who are taking hormone replacement therapy or taking supplements, taking right. herbs, it would all be controlled. And that is very important to understand. And I will continue to do clinical trials. But there is also the real world aspect of how are people engaging with this in a real setting. You know, mm-hmm. you are taking different herbs and supplements, you are doing different things, and that is okay. And not everyone is a research participant who can perfectly control their lives. And so we've made the decision for all of our products that we're going to do clinical trials, but we're also going to publish the real world data. And we encourage other digital therapeutic companies to do the same, because, you know, we just find that's the responsible thing to do. If you know, if we can show these work in a clinical trial setting, we should really also show that they work for people day to day, and that
I love that,
and that it is something that is effective outside of that clinical setting as well. So that's sort of our mission from a research perspective, and we'll continue to do that across all of our products for sure.
That's so great. I think it's really important, because if we're just relying on, you know, gold standard research to see if something's going to be helpful for someone, we're missing a whole population, you know, that might respond. It's always great to have both, right? You kind of have these two worlds to kind of compare.
Yeah.
Real world.
And we miss the, you know, the usability of it. I think what some other digital therapeutic companies are doing is that they'll publish the clinical trial data, but then, you know, in a clinical trial, you have a research coordinator who calls the participants every day or every week to make sure they're actually complying with it. And a protocol that can be perfectly effective in clinical trial, but then in real use out in the world, you know, if you don't have someone calling you every day, you're not doing it. And if you're not doing it, then it's not working. And so we even publish the adherence data, because we really feel it's important that if people don't enjoy it and they're not doing it, it doesn't matter how effective the protocol is, exactly. that really is an important aspect as well. So, you know, making sure that the programs are enjoyable to actually go through, has an impact on outcomes, has an impact on symptom outcomes for patients. So
that's so exciting. Yeah. So great what we can do now with, you know, with these apps and just interfacing with people so much easier, and collecting data is so much easier. So that's outstanding. I really like how you explain that. So, well, this was wonderful. I think, you know, what I'll do is make sure people know how they can download the app, and I'll put that information in. And I can say, you know, many of my patients are using Nerva as we speak, and it's a big part, a big tool in my management of digestive health with my patients. And this is going to be great to start to have my perimenopausal and menopausal patients also plug into hypnotherapy, because, you know, you're giving giving such guidance to the nervous system with it. And, you know, otherwise, you know, people don't really know how to guide their nervous system through all this. And hypnotherapy is a great guide.
Yeah. Feel free to put my contact information out there as well. I'm more than happy to answer questions. I love answering questions about this stuff. And all of our apps are available in the App Store and Google Play. We have more information at mindsethealth.com for healthcare providers and for patients. And if you're a nerd like me and you want to dive into the research, that's all there as well. And like I said, any other questions, I'm more than happy to answer.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Claire.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the One Thing Podcast. Please share these episodes with your friends, loved ones, colleagues, patients, healthcare providers, anyone who you feel might benefit from hearing these informative interviews. We tend to learn best from people sharing things with us. That's often the first time it's introduced. So don't hesitate if the content of these episodes reminded you of someone that might benefit from it. Forward the episode to them, and I'm sure they'll either appreciate it or be appreciative that you've thought of them. So once again, we'll look forward to seeing you next episode on the One Thing Podcast. And again, much appreciation for you being here with me.